Second hour here, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Someone won the tickets? Did someone win the tickets?
We did get a winner.
Okay. I guess we don't really announce that, do we? So I'm screwing
sometimes
up.
No,
I'm
no, we do.
So who's the winner?
The winner is Chris. Congratulations, Chris.
All right, Chris, there you go. Also, I'd like to invite everybody to tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball doubleheader tonight. 5:50 p.m., 94.9 The Fan Sounds, taking on Memphis Redbirds, AAA affiliate, the St. Louis Cardinals. Sounds Baseball and 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Farm, Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. So back to the Titans, because there have been other comments here on the offseason, sort of the idea of, you know, what would excite fans, okay? So we talked about the great move, you know, getting Lamar Jackson. You know, I think that's got to be part of it, right? I mean, it's got to be Lamar Jackson. I'm being facetious, but I'm not. You know, I like Lamar Jackson. I'm a fan. I think he's good. I think he's a second tier quarterback. I am worried about the injuries and also the way, you know, not having an agent through all this has been brutal. Did you see the Ravens press conference, by the way?
Super awkward.
Like, apparently they told reporters, do not ask about Lamar Jackson, which is incredibly stupid. Like, it's really surprising to hear that. That's something that you'd expect, like, the Lions organization to do. Like, tell reporters, no one can ask the question about the number one thing that everybody wants to know about. Okay? All right. Here we go. Like, of course someone's going to ask about Lamar Jackson. What are you trying to do?
And on top of that, he tried to phrase the question. They said, only ask about the draft. Well, guess what? You know, are you going to look at quarterbacks now that, you know, you don't really know if your quarterback is going to be here for the long haul? Like, right. That's a reasonable question.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, why would you silence the media over the biggest topic of your entire organization?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that was Bush League. I mean, the draft has to relate to Lamar Jackson. Like, the future of him has a lot to do with the draft. So that was goofy. But on the Titan series front, because I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to be a Titan. Of course, we've got Kevin Laverne saying, Gronk. Get Gronk to come out of. Hey, Gronk would be great.
He does yoga here.
That's right, Gronk. Does that mean he lives here? I mean, I just assume everybody ends up.
Everyone
has
a house here, I feel like.
Yeah.
Rent somewhere.
Right. So I mean, hey, if you can get him, if you could have gotten Brady, probably would have been easier. How about trade for Kyle Pitts in Atlanta? He's been a bust with Mariota passing to him. My response to that on the text line was, well, first of all, the Falcons aren't going to move Kyle Pitts. I don't think he's been a bust. Has Kyle Pitts been a bust?
No. I thought he got hurt.
He was banged up last year, but his rookie year, he had over 1,000 yards. He's not a bust.
No, he's.
They just need to get their quarterback situation down there.
They're going to hold on to Kyle Pitts. He's going to be a good player in this league. Got to be healthy, just like so many other. And that's so often the story when players don't pan out. But if he's healthy, yeah, man, that guy is a player. So excitement for the Titans. What can they do? I think that they're going to end up drafting an offensive lineman. And I think that you're right that's, you've got to be better there. Bad choices have been made there. So you have to keep drafting there, but you have to. And I think it won't be very exciting to people, but to your point, Junie, you know, there are a lot of receivers, second round worthy type receivers in this draft. And I think the Titans can get one. What they need to do is they need to get one who can come in and start. That's a big ask, you know, but they got AJ Brown in the second round in 2019, and that's the kind of thing they have to do here. At least get one receiver in the draft.
So here's a question I'll pose to you, Joe. Now, I know a lot of people have been talking about the Jackson Smith and Jigba at number 11, but what if they do go out and get a receiver at number 11? And, you know, they with Aaron Brewer, you know, signing his tender, they really only need one more offensive lineman. And I feel like for the guard position, you know, Brunskill's either going to play right or left. I assume he'll probably, you know, play right. Since they signed him, he's probably the veteran of the room now. So they can draft a guard in like the third or fourth round. You know, they can do that. I feel like that this year, if at number 11, if they're not going to go quarterback and they're going to wait to go quarterback either next year or, you know, sometime in the future, then why not go and get a surefire receiver? Why don't you be the first team to draft a receiver in this year's draft and get your pick of the litter? Because, you know, we've seen the last couple draft classes just be stocked with great talent at receiver. And this year is finally the year where they're saying, no, you know, we don't really necessarily know how good the receivers are going to be. Why don't the Titans go out and really evaluate that position and go draft the guy that they want to pair with Treylon Burks at number 11? Would that move the needle for the Titans this offseason?
Well, but what if it's a reach? I mean, you can't – I would not want to do that if my big board has players at other positions higher than any of the receivers, which I think is probably likely, right?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is likely. I just – I look at this year, and I think that there are certain receivers like a Quentin Johnson, like a Jordan Addison, you know, I'm not as high on Jackson Smith and Jigba. I think the whole hamstring thing, I wouldn't go with him with the first pick, especially with the history of drafting injured players. But even Zay Flowers out of Boston College, you know,
I
maybe
like him.
Or maybe even trade back, trade out of 11, move back, and then go get your receiver at, you know, a more valued position on your draft board and getting that.
Yeah, if someone wants to trade up to 11, fine. But can't just trade back, you know?
Every single pick. GMs are calling people like every single time that they go into pick, they're getting phone calls of people trying to move up. There's always somebody trying to move up. Even teams that you wouldn't expect that want to move up are likely trying to move up at a certain point to go get a player of need. I feel like that's every single time there's a pick, somebody's calling on the phone to try and see if they can move up.
I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of instances where teams would have absolutely liked to move down. Their players, they know they can get their player five spots from them. They'd love to get another pick. No one has some compelling reason to take that spot.
Maybe,
17.
Maybe it's undervalued. Maybe they're just, you know, lowballing. They're not getting enough for what they believe that pick is warranted or deserving. And they don't end up doing it because of the value. But I feel like, especially at number 11, where we've seen a lot of people trade up around that area, that there's going to be somebody that wants to trade up. I know a lot of people have like the Minnesota Vikings or the New England Patriots or you know, teams like that kind of, you know, have mediocre quarterbacks or you know rosters that, you know, need a lot of beefing up that would be willing to trade up at that spot. I feel like there would definitely be a suitor.
Maybe. I mean, if that's the case, I think that would be potentially a good move. Now, they also could be at 11 and say, yeah, Paris Johnson Jr. is going to be the left tackle of this team for the next 10 years and taking him right now, you know. So if that's the case, fine. Like Jackson Smith and Jigba, I like him a lot. He is, I think, a special player. I think he's a slot receiver in the NFL. And I'm not saying, like, Kyle Phillips has that locked down. You know, I mean, Kyle Phillips had one good game and muffed a punt, got hurt, and I don't know, like, his staying power in the league given his physical stature, but he is their slot receiver. And I just, to me, you know, Jackson Smith and Jibba, fantastic route runner, incredible change of direction, ran great at his pro day. You did have the hamstring. I think 11's high for him. I really do. I think 11's high. For him, I'm not like, you know, Jared's like, do not touch him because of the hamstring. I don't think you can look at it that way, but I think I would rather see, like, I like Zay Flowers. Could you get Zay Flowers with your second round pick? I don't know. Like, I think Jordan Addison, Jordan Addison's a really good college player. Like him a lot. I don't think Jordan Addison's a first round receiver. I really don't. I don't think Jordan Addison compares to some of the guys that we've seen in the recent drafts who have gone the first round.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think Jordan Addison's the real deal.
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, I think he'll be a good NFL receiver. In my opinion, he doesn't move the needle like the first round guys of recent years.
I mean, he did win the Blitnikoff.
Quentin Johnston is interesting. Yeah, I know he won the Blitnikoff. And there's people who win the Heisman who have no chance of being in the NFL. I mean,
that is also very true.
I mean, he was great that year with Pittsburgh with Pickett thrown to him. But, you know, he was in Knoxville. I mean, very good receiver, very good college receiver, NFL player, yes. First round, top half of first round player? I don't think so at all. But I think that speaks to what this receiver class is.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Let's say Skoronski and Paris Johnson get picked before number 11. If you're the Tennessee Titans right there, do you want to go and take the best offensive line available that you might not be as high on as those two guys, or would you rather trade back and go get a receiver later in the first round?
Again, I'm not against trading back if you can do it. if there's someone who wants 11. I think that just depends on how much you think of those guys. I think Skoronski, one thing about Skoronski is that I think he's an interior offensive lineman. Do you use 11 on it? Look, if he's a Pro Bowl guard for several years, then okay. But that's a high pick to use on a guy I'm pretty sure will not be playing tackle in the NFL.
I think he could play right tackle. But
you just drafted your right tackle, I think, right? Last year.
I mean, I think the jury's still out on Nicholas Petit Ferrer.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I don't think last year said anything that, has to be replaced.
Oh, no. I mean, offensive linemen don't really hit their peak until they're in, you know, year 4 and 5. Like that, and I know that that's tough to hear, but it's a maturation process for that position. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into being an NFL offensive lineman. It's one of the hardest positions to play. And, you know, people don't really realize that because, you know, no one's really paying attention to the offensive line during a game, unless you're Dennis Daly and just letting up, you know, 10-plus, 20-plus sacks in a year. But regardless, I think that if Skoronski is there, even if he's not a left tackle, he's a surefire player. And I think at this moment in time, when you look at your offensive line and you look at it and you're saying, we have zero surefire guys on this offensive line, like name one player on this O-line that you can definitively say will be here in 2 years. I would say there's not one. If you draft Skoronski, you got that guy.
In theory. Like Isaiah Wilson and Dylan Radins were also supposed to be. But yes, in theory. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk Preds, the playoff picture. Big development last night, and of course, a big one tonight as well at Bridgestone. Coming up next, Robin Brexler, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 Game. And folks, let me tell you, Preds fans, you hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook, enjoy great food and drink specials, plus enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Speaking of the Preds, first of all, another big game tonight at Bridgestone against the Carolina Hurricanes. And last night, the playoff picture, a big game. Now, the two teams the Preds are chasing, Junie Riddle, in for Robbie Stanley, by the way. You're no longer the guest. You're the dude on the couch today.
I'm glad to be downgraded.
What's that?
The couch isn't that bad.
Yeah, it's fine. Take your shoes off.
But like you mentioned, you know, big win for the Preds last night. They didn't even play. Calgary Flames beat the Winnipeg Jets, and now
in regulation, 3-1 at Winnipeg, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Preds. So first of all, the Preds control their destiny. Now, you know, there's some tough games ahead, but at least they have this in front of them. The Preds have a game in hand on the Jets. They are 3 points behind the Jets. They have two games in hand on the Flames. And same thing, the Jets and the Flames both sitting there at 89. It's funny because watching, I think the TNT pregame the other day, they're talking about, you know, okay, who's going to get that last spot in the West? You know, is it going to be Calgary? Is it going to be Winnipeg? Someone brought, well, you know, Nashville is still in there, guys. And the thing is, of course, the Preds go to Winnipeg, then they go to Calgary. So it's in front of them. I mean, they have a chance. And, I mean, the fact that they've gotten to this point with that opportunity, I think is pretty remarkable given the sell-off and the combination of that and the injuries that are keeping people, you know, out of the lineup. So, first of all, that makes tonight big to me. You know, look, even if the Preds don't win tonight, and Carolina, by the way, you know, Carolina's sitting there with 5 games left. They are in first in the Metropolitan. The Devils, 3 games back. Now they have a game in hand. The Devils, they're in pretty good shape to win that division. But it's an important game. I mean, you know, there's still 5 games left and 4 for the Devils and Rangers each. And the Rangers are, I think the Rangers are out. The Rangers are probably basically hoping they can beat the Devils out and host in the first round. But the Devils still have division opportunity. So it's a big game for the Hurricanes. I mean, if the Preds can even get a point tonight, to me, you know, that would be a pretty big deal. But even if they lose, like, you know, look, you got those next two games. You're going on the road. If you win both of those games, you're coming down to the last week with a real chance to sneak in.
I definitely agree with you. Tonight, I don't think is as important as Saturday and Monday will be for this team. You know, if they get a point, if they take it to overtime tonight, I think that will do enough. Then you're within 2 points of both of those teams. Since they played last night, they won't play tonight. If you beat the Jets and Flames and you get 2 points in both of those games, they are going to be in the wild card position. Now, what is going to be interesting is if they can hold on to it, because they have 5 games. The Jets have 4 games, and the Flames have 3. So if the Preds, in all reality, these next 3 games, if they get 5 points out of these next 3 games, I mean, it's going to go down to the wire. And then you're ending the season. Granted, you're going up against the Minnesota Wild and the Avalanche, who are currently ahead of you in the Central, but you're going to be hosting them at home with UC Soros playing as well as he is. These young guys that have come in and stepped up and are playing with nothing to lose. That's the thing with the Preds. If they don't make the playoffs, nobody's going to care. Nobody cares. They're playing with house money. You know, if they mess up and they barely miss it out, well, the fans are going to be like, well, you know, they unloaded a lot of these veterans. You know, they fought. The young guys really, you know, stepped up and took a leap in development for next year. You know, the fans feel like we're in a good spot right now compared to where they were in the beginning of the season. If they can just make it somewhat competitive down the stretch and get some of these wins, especially at Winnipeg and at Calgary, then, I mean, this season has been ultimately a success down the stretch after unloading some of those contracts that they've had.
Yeah, and it's been fun to see, you know, some of these young guys, you know, make big play. I mean, Tommy Novak is just – he's been unbelievable. You know, Cody Glass, obviously Tomasino has come in and he's been good. And someone on the text line earlier asked the question, you know, would basically paraphrasing, because I can't find it. It was a long time ago. I'm sorry. But basically asking the question of if some of the veterans come back, what would that do to the chemistry? First of all, I think Roman Josi is probably the only possibility there, I think. Based on what we're getting from the Preds, I think it would just be – and I do – I feel like there's a real possibility with him. I don't think anybody else is coming back anyway. So
I think Forsberg's definitely shut down for the year. Duchesne with, you know, the rumblings that have been coming out about his injury.
Well, he said it. Could, part of his finger. I mean, yeah.
Don't see him coming back either. I think if you get Juuso Parsonen back, I mean, that's another young guy that you probably want – in the mix to start gelling with some of this other young talent, you know, because, you know, realistically, you would like to see him, you know, with this young core and with this young group. So getting a guy like him, like Roman Josi, you know, he also plays, you know, defense. So, you know, it's kind of a different line, him being a part of the blue line. You know, I don't think that would necessarily mess up the chemistry as much as, say, a Forsberg or a Duchesne coming back and then kind of jumbling those forward lines.
And honestly, yeah, I agree. Exactly. I mean, it's not going to mess up the chemistry. And look, even if one of those guys came back with the forwards, there's still been quite a bit of jumbling and moving around and stuff like that. It's not like, I mean, this lineup has not been static. It couldn't be static really for long since the trading deadline. So, but look, it's going to be the young guy. It's going to be the young guys, and they're going to have an opportunity to do this. And it's got to be exciting to, like you said, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it's basically house money. Preds fans, since the trading deadline, have been conditioned to think about what the future will bring. Barry Trotz is GM. What are the moves? You know, what the draft, all that stuff. What can they do in free agency? How quickly are they trying to use cap space? But also, these young guys, what are they going to be? And I think you're getting incredibly valuable experience for them to not just be playing out a season and like, okay, go out there tonight and just see what you can do and, you know, show that you belong in this league. Like, no, you're actually chasing something. And I didn't anticipate that at the trading deadline.
So our very own Nick Kieser had a pretty awesome tweet last night. You know, just some fun stats. The reporter reports the injured Nashville Predators contract equal out to $38.7 million. Last night's entire roster for the Preds equaled out to $36.3 million. Nashville has 5 of their top 10 scorers making $875,000 or less since February 1st.
That's pretty good.
I mean, so just seeing you know, this core group of young guys on the cheap, on the low, that are probably going to be key depth contributors for the years to come when, you know, the first line group comes back. Some of your, you know, Roman Josi and company comes back. They're doing a serviceable job. And I think that if this can translate into success next year, I mean, you're talking about a quick turnaround if you know, these guys continue to give the production that they're doing as, you know, second, third, maybe even some of them fourth line players.
And we will talk about that and more with John Hines, Preds head coach, next on Robbie and Rextra. Welcome back in, Robbie Rextrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. As we've been discussing, folks, huge game tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Nashville Predators, Carolina Hurricanes coming right down to it. And to talk more about that, we have Preds head coach John Hines with us. John, how you doing today?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Big win the other night, John, and, of course, then last night, there's a big game. First of all, like, were you last night, are you sitting there watching Flames Jets intently, or is it sort of like, you know what, whatever happens, happens, you know, we got to take care of business if you're the Preds anyway? You know, how did you approach that last night?
No, I watched the game. I watched it pretty intently, so made sure we had dinner all done before the game started, and then had a chance just to sit down, because obviously we play, I think if we didn't play both teams coming up, you know, maybe sometimes you might not be as intently, because the results will be the results and we got to take care of our own business. But to get a little bit of a feel and watch both teams and just check on individual players, how players are used, some things that that they're doing is always, I think, beneficial when you have the opportunity to do it.
So how would you characterize this opportunity now? Now that it's down to this, you know, you play both of those teams coming up, but you have a huge one tonight. And also, John, I mean, if I told you a few weeks ago that you'd be in this position at that point, what would you have said?
Yeah, I mean, those are two really good questions. I think, you know, it's a tremendous opportunity, because I think there's been, you know, I think the players should really be commended. I think from, you know, just before the trade deadline, when we had moved some players out, you know, it was going to be a task to remain competitive, and players were going to be asked to play in higher roles. And, you know, one of the things we talked with the group about was it's important to play in high stakes games, like the experience at the NHL level, to be in a playoff race, to play meaningful games, to play under pressure. You know, it's a really good time of year, but it's a tremendous experience, particularly for the younger guys. And then, you know, this is something that, it, you know, internally for the players and coaches and, you know, and management was, you know, our goal was to remain competitive, because I think it's a great opportunity for the young guys. We also think it's a big statement about the veteran players that are going through this, that have been in the lineup every night. They have a big task to not only elevate their game and elevate their roles with all the injuries we have now, but also to be able to lead in the right direction the younger guys through this process. And I think it speaks volumes about the culture of, you know, the veteran players, and also the hunger and the ability of these young guys to come in and play in these situations and perform at a high level.
Yeah, on those younger guys, John, obviously whatever took place in terms of wins and losses down the stretch here, a ton of them were going to get an opportunity, and then even more because of the injuries of some of your key veterans. So, like, it was going to be an evaluation period, right? But, like, does the way things have gone, does that make the evaluation stronger or, I guess, clearer, because these games have some, you know, have more stakes, have pressure to them, or does that not really matter when it comes down to, you know, looking at these guys and trying to project them ahead?
It matters. you know, it matters because you can get in situations where, you know, you could be in a rebuild or your team falls out of it and players are just playing and there's no, you know, whether you win or lose the game, you know, there's not a ton at stake. So whether it's the decisions you make in the game, the competitive level, you know, you need to play at to play winning hockey at this level. You know, it's a big evaluation because sometimes younger players can come up and it's just, they're just playing. You know, I think you could say playing with house money. I think a little bit our team right now, you could arguably say, is playing with house money for the playoffs to get in because of all the things that have happened. But here we are. And I think it's important, you know, it is a strong eval because sometimes, you know, players can play really well in the American League, but it's two totally different leagues. There's just a different level of talent. There's a different level of grind, you know, from the American League to the NHL, just as far as how fast the games come. You know, there's not 2 and 3 days between games. You're basically playing every other night. Sometimes you're playing 3 and 4, back-to-backs, you know, 5 and 8 days, all those types of things with long travel. So I think all those experiences are really important. And then I'd say the last part is that when you sit in your summer meetings, you have some real meat on the bone now of guys that have played top teams, played against top players. You know, where do we see them slotting in, fitting in next year? What are some development things that they need over the summer? And I think it's even more important if we can keep it really competitive. We got some high stakes games coming up here starting tonight. And, you know, I think they're going to be meaningful games right down to the end. And then obviously if you get in the playoffs, it's even better evaluation and the experience. Like, for example, let's just take Philip Tomasino last year. You know, his first playoff game in Colorado, it was a totally different level than he's ever seen from the regular. Like, we played Colorado, I think, game 81, and then we played in game 1 of the playoffs, and just the atmosphere in the rink, the fan base, the level of play, the level of competition, like these are invaluable experiences for these guys and for our team moving forward.
We're talking to Predators head coach John Hines. Now, John, you know, with all the veterans being out, I feel like one of the leaders that we've seen step up has been Ryan McDonagh, a new addition to this team this year. What has it meant to have a veteran like Ryan McDonagh, and what is something that he has done to really kind of lead and elevate some of the young players to get them motivated to try and continue to push for this playoff run?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think there's, you know, before I get into McDonagh, I think there's, you know, three guys that have been in the lineup basically throughout this whole last 5-6 weeks. And, you know, Colton Sissons has really done an excellent job as a leader and elevated his role on the ice, but also his leadership and his voice in the room. I think Tyson Barry has come over and, you know, he's now come into a new team and he's playing different type of minutes. Harder minutes, more minutes than he played in Edmonton and a very different situation than what he left from Edmonton. But he's a veteran player who also has done a really good job, not only in his own game, but in helping be a voice in the room and guide young players. And, you know, he's done a very good job. And then also you have Ryan and, you know, Ryan McDonagh has always been really, really good with young players. You know, he's been a captain of the Rangers and we obviously know about his 2 Stanley Cups and his playoff runs in Tampa. So, you know, his voice is very strong in the room. He communicates well. He sends the right messages. You know, he's on page with what we're talking about as coaches. He's reinforcing it in the room. He's done a really good job of helping young players along. But, you know, when he speaks in the room, I think, you know, with all the other veteran players out, I think the guys really look to him. And he has the right message. He's willing to speak up. He's got the experience, and he's been really, really critical as a leader to guide us through this. And as much as we talk about the young guys, the young players have done a tremendous job. But I don't think it happens as well or as easily or they feel as comfortable and they're doing the right things night in and night out. Or when we have a bad game or when we lose a hockey game, you know, there's a voice in the room that's calming things down. Let's not get too high. Let's not get too low. Here's the things we got to continue to move forward. It doesn't happen if you don't have good veteran leadership in the room with the amount of young guys we have in the line.
So this past win against Vegas on Tuesday was your all's first home game since the tragic shooting that happened at Covenant. Can you kind of let us and the viewers know what the emotion in the building was like, you know, having your first game against such a big opponent? I know the win against Boston was huge morale-wise, but what was it like your first game back at Bridgestone Arena after the shooting and getting a huge community of Nashvillians together? What did that feel like?
Yeah, you know, it was special. Actually, Junior, I think we played St. Louis on Saturday. That was our first game back from after the shooting. But I also think it does tie into your question about the Vegas game. You know, when the players really took it personal. You know, obviously Ryan McDonough was one guy that had his family affected. I mean, obviously his daughter that's in school wasn't at the Covenant school, but she goes to a school in Green Hills, and you know, she was in lockdown while everything was going on because it was so close to the Covenant school. And you know, he didn't travel with the team to Boston. He flew commercial the next day to be able to stay home with his family. So you know, the Boston game for sure was certainly emotional. We kind of had a rally cry, you know, about our team just being able to represent Nashville, and when you have a platform as players and coaches and in professional sports, sometimes it can be a source of pride for a city, or even when people are in mourning, it's 2 or 3 hours that maybe fans can get away from some tragedies or things that are going on in their own life and support the team. And I thought the players did an unbelievable job, particularly in the Boston game. And then when we came home against St. Louis, it was really, really special. And, you know, the players knew that we were going to be able to meet some of the police officers that were in the Covenant school that were, you know, I think you all saw the videos of what had gone on, and those officers were at the game, and the players and the coaches had an opportunity to meet those guys and thank them. And that was a real, real special experience for the guys. And then I think you come back, we had the Dallas game, and then we came back home again. It's still there. And I think that, along with, you know, Pride Night and everything that goes along with it, the players certainly were emotional again, and performed at a high level. And I think it is a source of pride for the group. And it's really nice to see.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, sports can be really important, you know, at times like this, no doubt. And you guys have done a tremendous job with that. One last thing for Preds coach John Hines. Roman Josi, and it's a constant question, do you feel like, is it possible he could be back tonight? Do you think that he will be back soon, if not tonight?
I think it's very questionable whether he'll be back tonight. Hopefully he'll be back soon, but I don't have that answer. It's really kind of a day-to-day thing with how he's going. I haven't seen him yet this morning, but I'm not sure he's going to play tonight.
Okay, very good. John Hines, Preds head coach, big game tonight. Thank you so much, John, as always, and good luck tonight.
Appreciate it, John.
All right, guys, you have a great day. I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. That was John Hines, Preds head coach, big game tonight at Bridgestone, and really just fantastic. Beyond the hockey they've played, you know, the run they've made at the playoffs, like what they've done with the community in the last couple weeks, really, really important stuff too. And coming up next on Robbie and Rex Show, the Rex Rant, 102.5.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Glorious, and I love it here, I love it there, and I'm victorious.
It's so stupid. It's a terrible song.
Now, we've just been singing the Preds' praises, and now look, you got to take the good with the bad. They played glorious at the beginning of the third period the other night. Very disappointing. I mean, April in Portland always likes to tweet at me You know, whenever they play Glorious, and they kind of change it to, like, if they win the game, but now they're going back to being in the third. But they did win the game, so now they'll probably keep doing it. So it's just it's a vicious cycle.
I'm not a big Glorious fan either. I like
it's Glorious Domination, by the way.
I remember when you did that little bit about the song.
And you thought it sounded better than the actual song?
No. I would say no. I said they used to like switch off between Van Halen, Unchained,
which is the best Van Halen song, by the way.
I would agree with you. I love that song as well. And I thought that kind of got me more pumped up at Preds games, you know, entering into the third period than Glorious. I don't know. I don't get into it, especially, you know, it's a wrestling song, and sometimes those wrestling songs, like, they're good, but you know, that's not it.
No, it's a terrible song.
I love it. So,
do you really love it?
You love it?
You actually love that song?
I really like it. I don't love it, but I think it's fun.
So if that song comes on, you know, you're somewhere, whatever, you're in your car, and that song, like, you're gonna turn it up and you're gonna listen to the whole song.
It's never gonna come on. No, it's never gonna come on in my car. But like at a Preds game, it's like da na na
na na. Okay. All right then. Well. Now I've forgotten what I was going to rant about. Oh yeah, that's right, Twitter. I'm so fraudulent with my threats to leave Twitter. I went a couple weeks without tweeting, basically, which felt good. But you know, the problem is it's still the most effective news feed for me. And when you get used to that, like following certain accounts that have, you know, but the problem also now is like. Accounts even that I've decided to block so I don't have to see them anymore, they're still getting thrown into my news feed. But I think it's just amazing, this just idiotic blue checkmark thing for Elon Musk. So I'm trying to find the story. I believe 12,000, a little more than 12,000 people have bought the blue checks, okay? And we're talking, I think the plan was for millions to pay the $8 a month for a blue check mark. Like a blue check. First of all, I'm really mad that my blue check mark's still there. Take it away. Please take it away. I don't want it anymore. I mean, I know like Elon went to like the New York Times because, you know, he went individually and went to the New York Times and took away their blue check mark. You know, like this is some, like just some, you stripped them of their pride and dignity. I mean, It's just such a terrible business plan, and he has this idea where I guess like people who pay or people who are quote unquote legacy blue check marks, like you can't tell the difference. So basically now, whenever something big happens, and sadly, like you know, sadly in this country, shootings, for example, are happening on a pretty regular basis. So as we move forward and something like that or whatever it may be, a big news story, well, now you get to sift through blue checks, non-blue checks, and it's just going to make it even more confusing about who's an actual, you know, journalist or someone who you could rely on for information who speaks to officials and is actually doing any reporting on something or someone who's just throwing crap around on the internet. Great. That makes sense. I mean, it's all just such a terrible business plan. I understand Elon Musk is a billionaire, so he knows what he's doing in some ways. What he has done with Twitter is basically just send it right down the drain, man.
Sorry, Junie.
No, I mean, I kind of agree. I think the whole buying the check mark and not giving it to people who are actually working in the industry it makes it confusing. And then on top of that, you have like people, you know, stealing, you know, celebrities or athletes avatars and then changing their name and then, you know, subscribing to Twitter Blue and then going on and just like saying crazy things. And of course nobody looks into the profile and then everybody's confused and it's a whole like stir up in the media. I think it makes it really confusing.
Why does that help things? Why is that good?
I mean, I get the premise of trying to make money, but I feel like you can make money in different ways. You know, I mean, Elon has talked about how the, you know, advertising and revenue stream or whatever is at an all-time high. Well, then why do you got to pay for Twitter Blue? If the advertising is doing so great, like why do you make it like that? I don't know. I just think that it makes it ultra confusing, and nowadays I feel like I'm like clicking on numerous profiles to see like, oh, is this person legit or is it not? And it makes it hard to sift through and see, like you said, what news is real and what news is not.
And also, before, I know you want to jump in, Michelle, but just real quick, if you're someone who pays $8 a month for a blue check mark, what's wrong with you? Why? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? I mean, now it means nothing anymore. It means nothing. So why would you pay your own money for something that means nothing?
Well, I mean, businesses, like if you're a, like say our radio station, right? Like we're not verified on Twitter, but like you can't.
So before that would have mattered to be verified. It doesn't anymore.
But you can post like 10-minute videos. You can edit your tweets. You can send longer tweets. So I guess for like media companies and things like that, like from that standpoint, and then you're, I think,
functionality,
you know how you said that you're seeing people who you're like, I don't follow. I have a feeling there's probably some algorithm, and now on Twitter now has a you follow, or you can switch it to your For You page. It's, I have a feeling there's probably some algorithm. If you're a verified account, it'll probably pop up on your For You page if you're in this area or you follow similar accounts or something like that. But I don't like the For You and the following, because I feel like all these pages just pop up. And I agree, when you see like trolls or whatever, and then you're like, wait, is this real or is this not? Because I've definitely gotten dubbed. But good thing I always text you and Robbie every time I see a report, because then I'm like, okay, I think this is real. And then you guys let me know if it's real or not. You're like,
that's,
no, Michelle, you just got dubbed.
And that's the thing, even before, you know, that's even before it was confusing. Philip and Franklin says, Joe, I think Elon's doing it on purpose. He wants to ruin Twitter. Unintended consequences coming for sure, just like most things, but worth a thought. I assume when you spend what he spent to buy Twitter, the idea was probably to like make it a good investment. I would think.
I would hope so. I don't know. I'm not a kajillionaire like he is. I mean, he's like the richest man on the planet. He's doing stuff with SpaceX, which, you know, I mean, that's good for him, but maybe he just thinks that Twitter's just bad for the public. I don't know what his prerogative is with it. But, I mean, I just think the premise of it is, bottom line, you know, the system and the way it was, like, it wasn't perfect before he bought Twitter. But as somebody who didn't really have an issue with Elon Musk before this, but just this whole thing of confusing, like how Michelle says that she sends you all reports. Well, my person to send reports to is Michelle. I'm like, what do you think of this? So I don't know if this is like going down the line, like I send to Michelle, Michelle sends to you, but it's annoying. It's annoying to see, like, and I even remember one time, Michelle, like there was a report about the Titans, and it like in the bio of the individual even said like a news outlet, and it was a fake news outlet. So it's like, we went from not having to do as much research to having to like dive in deep on the individual that makes a tweet. And then on top of that, we have to go and then research the subject. It just adds an extra step to our job as people who actually try to report the news and talk about what's going on.
Yeah, it's a bleep show. For those of you complaining about stick to sports, I mean, the rants often aren't about sports, so that's not new. Eric says quickly, I absolutely hate the Preds goal song. It's played out. I'm over it. After 25 years, maybe we can retire and come up with something new. I will tell you, Eric, I disagree with you.
I love it.
That's and the thing is, goal songs should be very annoying, because they should be annoying to your opponents when you score a goal. That's why the Blackhawks' horrific goal song is perfect, because it's like you do not ever want to hear it. So I actually disagree with you on that. When we come back, Charles Robinson talking to NFL. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.